Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, December the 2nd. Welcome to the month of December. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into tonight, as always, when we do these shows with Bill. Today we'll be talking, of course, about the life and times of President Bush, who passed away on Friday night. I've always liked President Bush. He's one of my favorite politicians, obviously. You know, historians will judge his presidency, but I really loved the class. That's what I always loved about him. So I like to see him get a good funeral, and I mean get a good reception, and I think that he will in the funeral. We'll talk about President Trump down in Argentina at the G20 meeting. I don't think much happened there, but there was a lot of publicity, to say the least. Paris is burning. We're going to talk a lot about this. I think there was a movie. I remember a movie one time called Paris is Burning or something like that. Well, this time it's for real. Paris is indeed burning. We'll talk about Speaker Pelosi. How long is she going to be a speaker? I don't know whether she's got the votes, honestly, to survive and for how long. Ukraine and Russia, interesting little situation there. The migrant caravan is in trouble in Mexico. There's tremendous opposition in Mexico. In fact, there's a new poll that came out by a Mexican newspaper saying that 70% of the Mexican people do not want the caravan in Mexico. This is presenting a real problem for the new president of Mexico, who just took office on Saturday afternoon. And then there's something very interesting that happened in California. Bill has a post about this, and we'll get into it in detail, because I smell some corruption here. And that's what they like to call vote harvesting. I've never heard of that term before, but in this day and age, there's always a new word to learn. How are you, Bill?
Oh, reasonably well. Reasonably, I'm harvesting votes. I decided to spend the weekend harvesting votes. We dug a garden in the backyard, and we're going to harvest some votes. That's a big story, Silvio. That can grow into something substantial, because I think we should explain to the listeners how this started.
Yes.
There were all these Republicans in California, Republican members of Congress or candidates for Congress, who on the night of the election, when they counted the votes, were well ahead. And as the vote counting continued after, because so many voters, quote, turned up, or so many ballots turned up on Election Day, that they had to extend the counting. And one by one, each one of them, every one of them, was knocked off by a Democrat.
Right.
And that just doesn't happen. You know,
No, it doesn't happen.
The Speaker of the House said, you know, go ahead. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, who commented on this just last week and really got the story going, said, you know, where I come from, if you win on election night, if you've won the absentee ballots on election night, you've won the election. They were
right.
Stragglers. But here you had huge numbers of votes that suddenly turned up at voting headquarters on election day as a result of a change in California law, which is now being called ballot harvesting, where a third party can bring your vote in on election day in the envelope. And somebody said this was a change in the law designed to solve a problem that didn't exist. He said a stamp solves the problem. Put the damn stamp on the envelope and send in your ballot. But if you don't put the stamp on the envelope and give it to a third party and authorize the third party to bring it in, you don't know how that third party is going to mark that ballot. And
It just sounds too convenient.
It's basically an invitation to fraud, and it's the kind of thing you would want to associate with old big city political machines. And I think that there should probably be a major issue made of this, and I think there should also probably be some kind of an investigation, but I don't know who would conduct the investigation. Now, let's see if the Republican Party is interested enough to actually make a fuss over this. Because, you know, historically, the Republican Party has gotten used to the idea of losing. I mean, they kind of, they seemed always to enjoy it. As I say, they worked hard at losing elections and almost always succeeded. And they're the gentleman's party. They very often don't make enough noise when these things happen. But this really has the earmarks of a provision in law that was designed to allow for the stealing of ballots.
Oh, I think so. It just smells. It smells bad. It can only happen in California. And Speaker Ryan, the remarks that I heard from Speaker Ryan was that at 11 o'clock or whatever it was, midnight on Election Day, the GOP had losses of 26.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden there's losses of 40. Every single Republican in Orange County went down, which is pretty unusual because that's a very – I mean, that's one of the few Republican areas in California. I don't know if the GOP will do something in the Congress. I do have a feeling, though, that President Trump will make an issue, and this could be something the Department of Justice could look at if and when we have a new attorney general, which is another issue. That's another issue. I don't have a problem with Whitaker as a stand-in, but if I were President Trump, I'd be nominating somebody pretty quick. I mean, he's going to get him through the Senate, Bill. He's got the majority one way or the other. And, I mean, in a month he'll have a bigger majority, but he's got a majority now. So I don't know. I agree with you. I don't like it at all. I mean, this idea that, the election is – they stop counting and then all of a sudden only Democrat votes. Have you noticed that, Bill? Only Democrat votes appear. Isn't that amazing? If you had a proportionate number of Republican and Democrat votes, and you could say, well, it's a bad idea, but it was not intended to hurt one party or the other. But this is just Democrats, Bill, who show up after the votes are counted, I guess. It's horrible, Bill.
It is horrible. I mean, Joseph Stalin, who I usually don't quote because he wasn't a very nice guy, used to say it doesn't matter who votes in an election. The only thing that counts is who counts the – the only thing that is important is who counts the votes. And I'm afraid that's what we're seeing here. We don't even know what the will of the people was, but we do know who counted the votes. We know that the inordinate number of seats that had to be – that where the count had to be extended for weeks. I mean, this is also something that was unheard of, and nobody asked any questions. Nobody asked questions. The press is so bought. I think the San Francisco Chronicle did ask a few questions, but that was it, and nothing more. I think that you're right. The Justice Department has to investigate. He will need a new attorney general. And I'm guessing that we will not get a nomination until after Congress recesses, because I don't think he wants this Senate to be dealing with it, because he has to deal with Jeff Flake, who will probably do everything possible to hold it up.
Yes, Jeff Flake has disappointed me a great deal here in these last 90 days of of 2018. I mean, look, it's one thing to dislike Trump. It's quite another thing to hurt your country. I mean, when he's holding up judges, sorry, that's stupid. Senator Flake, I'm talking about.
Oh, absolutely. And he held up, what was it, 16 judicial appointments?
Yes.
I think they now have
Well,
to
what
be
I was talking about, and let me restate what I said. What I was talking about in the last 90 days, I was talking about Kavanaugh as well. He did vote for Kavanaugh, but he went along with that stupid little thing there at the end.
They were going to do a reinvestigation.
I thought,
well, he's very bitter toward Trump. He
yes,
decided
he
not to run again. He's an incumbent senator from Arizona, a Republican. And in fact, he's going to be replaced by this left-wing Chris Sinema. But he didn't feel he could get the nomination of his party again. He was very unpopular in the Republican Party, and it's strange because most of his voting was along conservative lines. But
yes,
he himself
is
one of those professional troublemakers, you know.
In Arizona too, Bill. Talk about vote harvesting. I'm not sure that happened in Arizona, but. McSally was winning on election night too.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that changed.
The only reversals we've had in the last in this cycle seemed to be Republicans winning on election night who later lost.
Mm-hmm.
And you do kind of wonder. Now, the California Secretary of State announced that this voter harvesting is just a myth, that what they were doing is making sure that every vote counted. Well, I think they were making sure that every Democratic vote counted.
Right. Well, I'm all for making sure that every vote counts, but as long as they vote within the rules. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if every vote is going to count, then what's the point of having elections? Why not just say, we'll have an election on Monday, we'll have another election on Tuesday? I mean, you know what I mean, until we win. And I'm all for counting votes and for making sure that everybody votes, but what we saw in California, again, I don't have any proof, but it smells real bad, Bill.
Yes, it was one right after the other. And as you said, mm-hmm. on election night, the Democrats only were ahead by 26 votes,
mm-hmm.
26 seats, rather. Now
right,
it's up
right.
to 40. And you wonder how you get 14 seats after Election Day. You know, I mean, it's never happened before. We've never had that happen before.
Well, to me, the most shocking thing is what happened in Orange County. I know that California is a Republican state, but there are Republican pockets there. And
it's
I'm not surprised.
It's a Democratic state.
Democrat state, I know. But
yeah.
I'm saying, you're right. I meant Democrat state, but there are Republican pockets in California, and Orange County is one of them. It's like in Texas, you know, Dallas County, Houston, these have become Democrat areas. But when you look at the rest of the map, that's not the case. But I don't know. I hope they look into it and maybe a new attorney general. You know, President Trump recently was visited by this Korean-American lady who lost in one of these little schemes. And she could become the face of this investigation. I would love to see that.
Yes, and it
Kim
was,
is her name, I think.
Yes, and Kim Young, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
Very, very good person, but he definitely needs a new attorney general. But as I said, I don't think we're going to get one until after this Congress adjourns, so that Mitch will have two more seats in the Senate to work with
mm-hmm.
in terms
right.
of confirmation.
That's right. Yeah, because you never know how Mr. Flake is going to go, Bill.
Well, that's right. So, but Flake will be out by then.
Yes,
Flake
he'll be out by
Flake,
the first
he will
week
be flaky,
of January.
He will be flaky in Arizona.
Right. That's right. He won't be, you know, whoever, this lady who's going to replace him, I'm sure, will be a very predictable liberal vote. Although they told us, they keep telling us that she, you know, she stands up to her party, but I don't see any evidence.
I think it's marginal, and I would not be shocked if she were on the short list to be vice president.
I think so. I think she could very well be on that list. Of course, that depends who gets the nomination, and it's starting to look more and more like they're going to have their debates in a baseball stadium, because I don't know if all the people running fit in a regular stage, Bill.
Well, there are so many who have been. But remember, the great mentioner, as they say in politics, the great mentioner mentions these names. That doesn't mean there's any serious thought behind them. I mean, I do not see how Cory Booker could be nominated by any serious political party. Kamala
mm-hmm.
Harris seems to be the one that people talk the most about
because right,
she has
right.
she checks off the, you know, they have the little checklist in the Democratic Party. Are you or have you been a member of a minority group? You know, are you oppressed? You know, and she kind of can argue that. I still think that the elders in the party, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, are not to be ruled out. Hillary obviously wants to run again. She's going on this magical mystery tour, you know, where she and her husband have a discussion on stage in exchange for a ticket price that's enormous. And it's
mm-hmm.
obvious she just wants to keep her name before the public. I cannot imagine the party nominating her. I mean, she has such a history of losing, and also she's no more popular now. There is no—I mean, she is the only loser for whom there is no sympathy vote.
That's right. No, you're right. When Romney lost, I mean, many of us felt like, "Gee, I feel bad for Romney. Maybe we should renominate him." You know. But you're right about Hillary. Now, Maureen Dodd has a really interesting article today where she talks about how their first appearance or whatever, it was like half full. Nobody was there.
Yes, they had to
empty,
they had to curtain
yeah.
off part of the stadium to make it
right.
look as if there were more people there. And she, you know, it's the same. Also, by the way, with Obama, that Obama goes around and speaks to very small groups. He
mm-hmm.
he does not have anywhere near the appeal in terms of public, you know, wanting to see him that Trump does. The one who gets
right.
the biggest audiences by far is Donald Trump. Now, that doesn't mean he's loved. I don't think anybody particularly loves him. But he there's one thing about Trump, and that is when he puts on a show for an audience, and
mm-hmm.
They like what he has to say. He often is coarse, but they like what he has to say. Nobody cares about what Obama has to say. First of all, he spends part of his time insulting the audience, which is not a good thing. You know,
no.
you don't want to go to a rally and hear yourself referred to in the way that he refers to American citizens.
Right.
The Clintons,
and then he talks about himself all the time, Bill.
Well, that's it. It's always I, me, and he. I thought it was hilarious last week because he was taking credit for the oil boom.
Right.
His administration
that was
did everything possible. They did everything possible to frustrate that oil boom, and then when it turned out to be successful, he's taking credit for it.
That's right.
He's the old Soviet.
No, he is really. He is truly, absolutely, absolutely amazing. Well, I wanted to take a minute here and talk about President Bush, who passed away, Bush 41, of course, passed away Friday night. And he was 94. And, you know, it's amazing to me. This is one of those statistics. He and Barbara were married for 73 years. They celebrated
yeah.
their 73rd anniversary, which is, of course, it means two things. Number one, they were married very young, obviously.
That's
but
right,
it also
yep.
shows you that they lived a very long life, both living into
yeah.
their almost middle 90s. I always liked Bush. I always liked him. I thought he was a very decent man. Now, he's getting accolades from people that I keep wondering, where were these people in 1992 when
well,
we really needed them? Because, you know, everybody loves him now. And I think they're using President Bush to beat up on Trump by saying, remember when politics was so decent? Well, yes, I remember when politics was decent in 1992 and they were calling Bush all kind of names. I remember that. But
yes.
anyway, that's the way it goes.
Well,
but I thought he was a good man. I always liked Bush, Bill.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting that in some of the obits and the recollections, the so-called political reporters in Washington who have an attention span of 2 weeks have often neglected to point out that when he ran for re-election in 1992, there was a third person on the ticket, on the ballot, and that was Ross Perot. Ross Perot got 20% of the vote. That's what knocked off Bush. Had it not been for Perot, Bush, I think, would have been re-elected. But Perot,
mm-hmm.
who came, saw, and has disappeared, I don't know where he is right now, but he was really the factor. Bush in 92 was in very bad shape. He had been at the top in terms of popularity
mm-hmm.
after the Gulf War, but then the economy tanked, and we were in a recession during the 92 election. His economy went way down. He sometimes gave an impression of being a little distant, and I think during one of the debates he kept looking at his watch. He didn't run a great campaign, and that plus the combination of the economy and Ross Perot is what cost him the election. I don't think there was a great wanting of Bill Clinton. I didn't hear
no.
this great groundswell, but they actually became friends later, which I'm glad to see. Now, the interesting thing this week is going to be that President Trump will be at the funeral. Now,
mm-hmm.
he did not go to Barbara Bush's funeral. He said he didn't
no.
want to disrupt or to distract attention. But he will be at this one, and he will be there, I'm sure, with every other former president. Well, he's, of course, the current president.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is how he will be received. You know, will there be
mm-hmm.
a reconciliation? Or will he just be there as the president and kind of ignored? And I would hope that there would be some kind of reconciliation. But he would, and he has actually initiated that. You see, he's
right,
sending
yes.
Air Force One to transport
right.
the body of President Bush to Washington, and then back to the burial site in Houston. And he has been very gracious since Bush's death. The statement from the White House was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
That's
somebody
right.
talked some sense into him. And
well,
said, shut
and
up
you're
and right.
He was
thing.
Very gracious. And also, as I understand, he spoke with former President George W. Bush and Jeb Bush. He spoke to both of them on the phone,
yes.
which I was happy to see that because, I mean, look, if I'm Jeb Bush, I'm not really happy with Donald Trump for personal reasons. I think Jeb Bush has every right, because I thought Jeb Bush was a very serious man, is a very serious man, and was an excellent governor. And I thought he was attacked in very unfair ways, but, you know, politics is unfair. But I would love to see a reconciliation, because it's good for President Trump, it's good for the country, and it's good for the Republican Party. But, you know, Jeb Bush is probably finished in politics, if I had to guess. You never know. He still possibly could run. But there is a George P. Bush here in Texas.
Yes, in Texas. Mm-hmm.
Who is the number three or number four person in our state government, who I think could be a George Bush in the future. I think very much that he will run for governor after Abbott. And speaking of president, keep your eye on Abbott. I think I really would like to see him run for president. He's been a very capable governor. But Bill, one thing I wanted to say about President Bush, and then we'll move on. I was thinking to when Saturday morning, as they were, you know, reporting on his death. I didn't find out till Saturday morning. It was late Friday night. I didn't hear it. And I was thinking there, saying to myself that I have personally voted for a George Bush in six out of seven presidential elections, two as vice president, two as president, and then two for his son. And I was just thinking, if we will ever again, we never had it before, and if we will ever again have anything like that, where the name George Bush, four times in terms of Bush 41 and two times in terms of Bush 43, that is six out of seven presidential elections where there was a George Bush on the ballot, I mean, for president or vice president. That's pretty incredible. I mean, just as a historical data, Bill.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, there always seems to be a Bush or a Clinton running somewhere. I mean, now, you know, maybe they'll – that's actually a good idea. I mean, if Hillary wants to run again, why doesn't she run in another country? You know, she can
well,
she doesn't have to run here.
Maybe run in Canada. I think they might take her up there, but she's not drawing big crowds, Bill. I think your point about the big crowds is probably not going unnoticed on many Democrats. But one thing I'll say about 2020, whoever runs, we'll find out eventually. But a lot's going to depend on President Trump's electability. And if he looks strong, let's say, next fall or let's say a year from now, if he looks strong, I think you'll see a lot of the younger Democrats take a hike, because they don't want to burn themselves, and that's where I think the possibility of a Joe Biden could step up, where he could be the man who gets nominated, like Bob Dole in 96 or something like that. I could see that happening. I don't see Hillary Clinton, though. I think Joe Biden, yes, but I don't see Hillary Clinton. John Kerry, perhaps a possibility. He might also run, but that's isn't it amazing that there's nobody new in that party? That's the amazing thing to me, Bill.
Nobody knows who's worth it, because it's a very mediocre party. It puts an emphasis on mediocrity. It really does. The great qualities of judgment and statesmanship and wisdom are really gone. I mean, and what is also gone is the idea of party elders having an important say. We've talked before about the smoke-filled rooms, and no matter what you can say about smoke-filled rooms, these guys never went to a convention and nominated a jerk. They had too much pride. They considered themselves professionals, and they gave us some pretty good guys. Now, one thing we should talk about: let's not rule out the possibility that President Trump can be primaried.
Yes,
you know,
you're right about that.
You have Mitt Romney in the U.S. Senate.
That's right. You have Mitt Romney and Governor Kasich up in Ohio has been talking about it. I don't count Senator Flake as a serious challenge.
No.
But he's been talking about it too. So you never know. Why don't we do this, Bill? Let me take a break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about that, because I think you could have more than two candidates, I think, in 2020. That's right, because I do think that the country's ready for that, and you're – well, we'll talk about it in a second. We'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerin-Harpin. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. Click on that. It'll tell you where he's playing around Dallas. We also have a link to my good friend Duke Machado, who's a car dealer. So click on Duke if you're listening to a car, for if you're looking for a car, and click on Carlos if you want to go around and listen to some good music around the Dallas area. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, you were talking about the possibility of a challenge to President Trump. I have felt that for quite some time. But it's still, in my mind at least, I can see Mitt Romney doing it. I can see John Kasich doing it. But in my mind, it still comes down to that question, where is President Trump going to be politically a year from now? Let's say Thanksgiving 2019. If he looks fairly strong, I mean, he's not exactly weak right now. I mean, if you look at the numbers, he's really not that weak. He's in better shape at this moment. If you compare where President Trump is with President Obama, President Clinton, President Reagan, at this moment, he was actually stronger politically than those three, Bill.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about pre-presidential politics is that the polling very often can be very deceptive and can give, mm-hmm. in effect, bad advice to potential candidates. Many polls back in 1988 showed Michael Dukakis beating George Bush.
That's right.
In fact, when Dukakis was nominated, there was this great optimism that he was the one. He was going to be the one to return the Democrats to the presidency. Well, Bush ran a tough campaign. He could be very rough when he wanted to be. And Dukakis ran a very poor campaign. If you look at polls now, every one of them, if you put President Trump against any of the potential Democrats, they all come out ahead. Well, they come out ahead because people don't know them. And they, you know, once the campaign begins, they always say in politics, once you declare for president, you lose 10 points the next day, because suddenly you're a real candidate, and people find out. And Trump, they're already organizing the 2020 campaign, which is good. They're getting ready, and I have a feeling they will be ready. The one thing that they have to be careful, well, they have to be careful of the following things. Number one, the Democrats are going to be very well financed. I mean, mm-hmm. Trump will be well-financed, but the Democrats will be better financed. They had these crazy billionaires who think they're, after they've destroyed everybody else in business, they've become great liberals, you know? And they write these very large checks. Another thing is, and I think it's a very legitimate comment, that Trump has done nothing to expand his base. He speaks to his people. And the point is being made by critics. He has got to expand into minority communities. He has that ability. He has mm-hmm. that ability. I think the Hispanic community is ready for a candidate who wants to build small businesses because there's a lot of entrepreneurship. You made that point in one of our programs in the Hispanic mm-hmm. community. I think many young African Americans are tired of being, you know, spoken down to and told, well, you got to vote for the brother, or you got to vote for this one, you got to vote for that one, and then getting nothing for it. And in fact, the support for Trump in both the black and Hispanic communities has gone up since his election. He has got to maximize that. I think he ought to go into big cities, make that a major part of his administration, twist some real arms in Silicon Valley, and get them to build factories in these big cities so Made in USA becomes, in effect, a slogan for the African-American community as well as for the nation. And I think he could put a dent in those communities.
Well, as I was saying before, if you look at the numbers, I went back and I looked at President Reagan at this time. Of course, President Clinton and President Obama had really been devastated by their first midterms, And for all of the negativity about President Trump's midterm, I mean, the Democrats have a majority of 16 in the House, which is not a lot to write home about. And
no.
they, you know, he did hold on to the Senate. And looking at the incumbents in 2020, the Republicans are actually in pretty decent shape going into 2020. I think you're right, though. He has to do something. He's got to bring some women home, if I could put it that way, because there's no question that suburban women made a big impact in this election. So he's got to work on that. He's got to work on some minorities. And maybe he's starting to realize that, Bill, by the way he reacted to the death of President Bush. I mean, the super gracious way that he dealt with it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been the, from my point of view, that's been the best Trump that I've seen in a couple of years, Bill.
Yes, that was Trump at his best, or Melania at
yes.
her best. We don't know who actually did it. But if he continues on that course and shows some humanity, he has got to do better. I mean, apparently some of the people in the military are ruffled by him, by some of his behavior recently.
Mm-hmm.
He has got to shore up those things. And he's got to basically understand that the 2020 election campaign has already begun.
And the point you made about the billions that are going to be spent, you're exactly right about that. They're going to go after him this time, big time. But again, it still comes back to the Democrat, who they choose.
Mm.
And so far, I don't really see anybody who stands up to him in a debate. Bloomberg... I don't see Bloomberg connecting with a lot of people. He's a very capable guy, and I know he did a good job in New York City, from what I understand. But I don't see Bloomberg doing it. I see him more as a third party, Bill. That's what I think.
Well,
Bloomberg wants to run, and he's got the money to go third party, Bill.
That is a possibility, and you know the problem with Bloomberg is that he is dull. I mean, he's a very dull speaker,
yes.
and he is modest. I mean, I think that Bloomberg is the kind of a guy, if he had to go into a crowd and shake hands, he'd have a bottle of Purell with him, and each time he shook.
Right.
He shook hands.
That's right.
I mean, he's not that great with people,
no.
But he could attract basically based on. He would run as a kind of elder statesman, you know,
mm-hmm.
a calm
right.
voice, a big businessman who became a mayor, did a good job, no scandals, no tawdry stories about him, and he could take votes, but he would understand himself that he'd be taking votes away from the Democratic Party and, in effect, giving votes to Trump, and that's something he doesn't want to do. He obviously despises Trump.
I think so. I think you're right. You're right about that, Bill. Let's talk a little bit about briefly about the House Democrats, who apparently have nominated, or I don't know if they have actually renominated her. They intend to renominate her in January, because the vote doesn't really happen until January. She's got to get 218 votes,
yes.
And I don't know how she does it now. Maybe they'll figure out some. Maybe they'll do some vote harvesting. To get
yes,
her to become yes. the speaker, you know.
I don't know. Let's
but,
see. I think the speaker to be speaker, I think you have to get 50% plus one, and she.
Well, 218. She's got to get 218 because
yes.
it's 435 members. Now, I'm hoping a lot of Republicans actually vote for her, because
yes,
I think she would be a delight. It'd be a delight to have her as speaker. I say that she's not very popular, Bill, as you know.
No, there are a lot of Democrats who really don't want her as speaker. I don't know if it's a secret ballot. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's a secret ballot. But I'd have to look that up. But I will, you know, it is possible that that she could lose and that somebody would put up another Democrat who would then have unanimity in the caucus. But it could turn into a mess. I think, though, that you're right. I think that the devilish Republicans will vote for her. Just to have her as a foil for another 2 years.
Well, I'd love to see that, because I love to see her face, you know, that morphing when they do the face of Nancy Pelosi with the
oh, yes.
Democrat running for re-election. I think that would be very effective in some parts of the country. Speaking of burning, the city of Paris is up in smoke. I mentioned there was a movie one time. Wasn't there a movie called Is Paris Burning? I thought
Paris
so.
Burning,
I thought
yes, it was a question mark. and it had
it
had to do with the evacuation of Paris by the Nazis after the Allied invasion, and the order was given from Berlin to burn Paris, and that's where the question came from: is Paris burning? Apparently, the German commanders on the scene refused to do it. But I don't don't remember the exact...
Yeah, I just remember one day flipping through channels and seeing a black and white movie with Nazi generals and talking about, you know, I don't know, just and it was called "Is Paris Burning?" And I thought it was a very interesting title. Well, the real Paris is burning, Bill,
yes,
and burning quite a lot. And it's amazing to me, the opposition to Macron... who I remember a year and a half ago, Bill, he was we were talking about Macron like the French Obama. I mean, this guy was just going to be the darling of the American media. He's not anymore, or at least not in France. There's even talk, Bill, I heard about this, and I'm not familiar with the French constitutional system, so I don't know if this could happen, but there's talk of forcing him to resign, which would be pretty amazing, Bill.
Well, he has a little bit of the American Democratic Party spirit in him, in that he talks down to people, and that has not served him in good stead. One story made the point that the only solid support he has is among wealthy intellectuals. Does it remind you of something? He has made disparaging remarks about French workers, kind of the equivalent of Hillary Clinton's deplorables remark.
Mm-hmm.
He does not seem to understand what the demonstrations are about. Actually, the proximate cause is a gasoline tax,
mm-hmm.
but it simply is one of those issues that they put forward that reflects dissatisfaction across France with the state of the French economy, and also with the whole immigration thing, which is blowing up in everybody's face in Europe. So we don't know what's going to happen to Macron. There was a belief when Trump came to office that he and Trump would get along very well, but... they called it the bromance, you remember, but they didn't, and he has made really some very bad moves. Macron, he insulted Trump when Trump was in Paris recently for the commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I. Lectured Trump, with Trump right there about patriotism, and I think that there's a feeling that he has a much higher opinion of himself than anyone else has of him.
That's right. Well, it's interesting to me when you look at Macron, when you look at Theresa May, when you look at Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister of Spain, and lots of these other countries. I mean, I look down at that G20, and with the exception of the incoming president of Brazil, I think everybody else has a lower approval rating than Trump, Bill. I mean, they're not doing very well politically,
most of these
countries.
That's
and a lot of it has to do with the economy. A lot of these countries. Now, what I hear about France, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I hear about France is that they're trying to raise taxes for carbon tax or whatever it's called. That's what they're saying, and that the opposition is really very strong outside of the cities. Now, in Paris, a lot of people get around in public transportation like they do in New York. But when you get out of Paris, many of these places where you actually have to drive to go to work, it's pretty expensive to pay higher taxes, Bill.
That's very, very true, and especially in a country that many people see as a diminishing country, and one in which many people are frightened. You can call it racism if you want to. I don't think it's particularly racism, but they are afraid that the enormous number of immigrants from the Middle East will have the balance of power in the vote in not too many years, and it won't be France anymore. And I know that is the kind of sentiment that people believe is bigoted. It may be in some cases, but I think it's something that is definitely affecting the vote. There in both France and Germany, far right parties have been gaining popularity.
Well, in Italy too, as I understand, in Italy as well. Where you have a party that I think was just recently elected on that basis. In Austria, that's certainly true, and even Sweden, some of these Scandinavian countries, that's also changing. Of course, the Eastern European countries have always been more skeptical of immigration, but they've got one thing that Western Europe doesn't have, and that's babies, because most of these Eastern European countries are still reproducing. to maintain their population. So immigration is not as much a threat to them as it is in places like Spain. I mean, here's Spain. This is amazing to me, Bill. Spain, Catholic Spain, has a birth rate of 1.27. I mean, it's almost incredible. If you had said that to me 30 years ago, I wouldn't have believed it, Bill.
That's right. And I think Sweden, I don't even know if they have a birth rate in Sweden. I think they're too bored to have children. Sweden is a country that really is in serious cultural trouble. It's in serious trouble in other ways. It was supposed to be the paradise. I remember when we were all growing up, people looked to Sweden for clean air and nice cheap furniture. Sweden, and you could put it together actually, and Volvos. And Volvo was supposed to be such a good car.
And Bill, don't forget ABBA.
Yes, that's right. And ABBA, and they always seem to people who would take showers three times a day, and were clean and neat. And until once I had a conversation with my Swedish publisher, who disabused me of all this, and he said, "Look, Stockholm is a city where half the city takes care of the other half of the city." Hmm. And I got my first indication of what it really was and what socialism really was, because they no longer own Volvo. I don't know whatever happened to Saab. I don't think there's been any real innovation that's come out of Sweden in recent years. IKEA is still doing business, you know, if you want a nice table that you can build yourself. But that's about it. The country itself apparently is not all that happy. There are cities in Sweden, as I understand it, where the fire department cannot come into a fire zone without a police escort because the firemen are constantly being pelted by the immigrant groups.
Not a good situation. And to top it off, ABBA doesn't even live in Sweden anymore. They now have tax residents in other countries. They only go back to Sweden once in a while to sign a few autographs, but all of them actually live in tax havens because when you make that kind of money, Sweden is not a good place to live.
No.
But what's happening in Europe is interesting. You brought it up, Bill, because we may be seeing some of that in Mexico, of all places. In the city of Tijuana, which is right across from San Diego, that's where the caravan showed up, and the citizens of Tijuana are up in arms about it. The mayor he's not blaming the United States. He's actually blaming their central government, and he was being interviewed today. And he said, "Look, you know, we cannot handle this. It's nothing against these people." He was being interviewed, Bill, by Jorge Ramos from Univision.
Yes.
And Jorge Ramos brought up the issue. Well, you know, you're sounding like they're calling you the Mexican Trump. And I was watching this in Spanish. That's why I was watching this in Spanish this Sunday morning. And he said, "No, I'm not the Mexican Trump. I'm just defending our city and our people. We cannot handle, you know, I sympathize with them why they want to leave their countries, but we cannot handle it." And what's interesting, Bill, there was a poll that was done by a major newspaper in Mexico, pretty reliable pollster, and 70% of the Mexicans don't want the caravan in their country. You know, so it's not just happening in Europe. It's happening in a lot of other places, Bill.
Yes, and I think that there is a very heavy suspicion hanging over this whole thing that this caravan business was organized, that it was probably organized by left-wing groups. I think that there are some Hollywood actors who are screaming that we're gassing children, and they might ask the question, what kind of a movement pushes children up to a border where there is combat going on? You know, and I think that's been a very powerful argument.
They didn't say anything, Bill, when Obama did it. When Obama was gassing people.
No, he did it 14 times.
Yeah, and they forgot about that. They didn't bring that up. That when Obama was separating families or gas, and I'm not saying Obama personally did it. I don't mean to say that, but his administration approved it. And I'm not saying Obama was wrong, by the way, in what he did. I mean, I think that, you know, you have that option as a country to defend your border. So I'm not saying Obama was wrong. I just don't like the situation that when Obama does it, we don't bring it up. When Trump does it, it's the end of the world, Bill.
Well, that's the point. And you know, but the fact is that Obama He didn't use, you see, it's really they're lying about Obama as usual. He didn't use tear gas. They fired cotton candy at these people, and they were happy. The children were happy. Obama did a lot of things that he was never called on by the press because the press loved him so much.
That's right. Yeah, including putting 2,000 high-powered weapons in the hands of cartels that ended up killing 400 Mexicans, detail that never comes up. Fast and Furious, yes. And then, of course, he told us he read about it in the newspaper, which is pretty amazing. Oh, I just opened up the newspaper one Sunday morning. Michelle and I were having some coffee, and I said, look, Michelle, who put these weapons in the hands of these cartels, you know? I mean, it's amazing that a president of the United States would say something like that, you know, with a straight face. I mean, if he found out about it in the newspaper, Bill, I would have the attorney general down in my office in a heartbeat to explain how this happened.
Well, his attorney general was Eric Holder, who I think politicized the Justice Department and racialized the Justice Department, and we have still not recovered from it. But he didn't seem to have any problem with Eric Holder. And I think a lot of people had a problem. That's another one, by the way, who wants to run for president.
That's right.
Eric Holder. Eric Holder has thrown his helmet in the ring, and said he would be available. He would be available.
Yes, there's going to be lots of people. You could actually. It's going to be a lot of collector items coming out of that 2020 campaign with all the Democrats all the buttons and all the slogans, Bill.
Yes. There used to be a saying that if somebody walked into the Senate cloakroom in the Capitol and said, Mr. President, everybody would turn around. they all want to be president. I mean, that's really the prize. Now, Sherrod Brown of Ohio is being mentioned,
yes.
The great mentioner has mentioned him. But the one I particularly love is Beto because the guy lost, you know, and he lost. He doesn't know what his real name is. He's got this little problem of a billionaire father-in-law, as he pretends to be a guy just in jeans. And he's taking it very seriously. He has the wanting of Beto, which he hears. You know, it's coming just from maybe one member of his family, but he hears it. And there are some people. You remember, a dark horse could emerge, and that is possible. It doesn't normally happen, but you can get somebody who, in effect, comes out of the blue.
Right.
And it could be somebody of some capability, or it could be Oprah.
That's it. That could be anybody. I mean, look, if anybody had said to me, and I think we talked about this back then, if anybody had said to me at this moment, let's say Thanksgiving or December 2014, that Donald Trump would be elected president in 2 years, I would have said, no way that's going to happen. If anybody had said to me December 2006, Barack Obama was going to be elected president, I would have said, no way. So we don't know. There could be a person out there who could be our 46th president, and you know, we don't know who he or she is. So we're going to have to give this thing, as they say, a little bit of time to see what develops. Very quickly, Bill, because we're flying through the time, and I want to get to a couple of stories. Ukraine and Russia is interesting, and what I find fascinating there is that the Russians are being bullied, but the Ukraine's going to fight back. These are not people who are going to sit there and be rolled over. They're going to fight back. That could be a bloody situation very soon, Bill.
It's one that's hard to follow because you don't really know exactly what each side wants. It's right now they're kind of shadow boxing, and I think that Putin is seeing how far he can push Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my theory. It's only a theory. I have no evidence. And Trump has so far been pretty tough on Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Trump will handle this well. He knows the danger of appearing to be soft on Putin.
That's right. For him especially, that's a real danger. And the Democrats, of course, will remind him if he's weak on Trump. The same Democrats who apparently had no concern at all when apparently Russia was intervening in our elections, all of a sudden are very concerned.
And they had no
Trump
concern when Russia went into Crimea.
They didn't talk about that.
No talking about that. And I haven't noticed any real interest on the part of the Democratic Party in Russia since the late 1960s. They have never shown. I mean, that's a different party than it was then, and they have no great concern about Russia. They have a concern only about anything that will help them get elected.
That's exactly right.
It's basically run today as a business.
Before we get to next week, Bill, and what you're going to be following next week, I wanted to bring up quickly the situation of, on this day in history, 1954, Senator McCarthy was condemned by the U.S. Senate. And one of the things I know you told me a long time ago is that this was a Republican being hounded by Republicans. This was a case of Republicans doing the right thing, and it's a good little historical fact, Bill.
Oh well, yes, and that's a very important fact because over the period of years, you find that the Republican Party has been much better about disciplining itself than the Democratic Party. That's the one area where the Republicans have been better. There have been certain Republicans who've come forward and expressed ideas that were racist or that were somewhat sympathetic to fascism, and they have been put down pretty quickly. The Democratic Party, you have this whole Farrakhan fringe on the Democrats, and nothing is done. Nothing is done. When McCarthy began to emerge, it was Republicans who eventually realized he had to be brought down, and they brought him down. It was the Watkins Committee in the U.S. Senate. It was senators like Margaret Chase Smith of Maine. It was some others. And, of course, behind the scenes was President Eisenhower, who orchestrated a lot of this. We didn't realize it until long after he left office when his private papers were released. But it was Republicans. Now, Democrats, of course, had a field day criticizing him, but they never actually did anything.
That's right. That's right. And this is, you know, McCarthy became such an embarrassment for everybody, not just the Republicans. It was a really sad thing. In fact, they invented the term, you know, McCarthy, you know, the doing a McCarthy, right? McCarthyism. Yeah, they invented that term. Well, Bill,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead and make the point.
It's greatly exaggerated. I mean, it's used much too much. However,
right.
What you saw involving Judge Kavanaugh, what was done to Judge Kavanaugh, was McCarthyism. That was exactly what McCarthyism was.
One of the worst examples of McCarthyism ever. And it seems like every day there is a new detail that the women who criticized him, in fact, were not telling the truth, which is really, really an indictment on the people who went after Kavanaugh. I guess next week will be tied up quite a bit with President Bush's funeral, and maybe things will cool down a little bit, and there won't be that much politics for a few days. But Paris is still going to be burning, that's my guess, and there's all kinds of rumors, too, Bill. I don't know if you've heard this, but there's all kinds of rumors about that this person in Utah who has been investigating the Clinton Foundation may have some news. I've seen a couple of things about that. I don't know if you've heard that.
I just read the same things you do, and there is, yes, he's a U.S. attorney in Utah who was given the task of investigating the Clinton aspects of the Russia probe, and yes, there are stories that he has some details. There are also hints from the White House, because the president has been saying, wait till you see what's going to happen next, and it may be that Mr. Trump knows something we don't know. The possibility of them coming down again on Hillary Clinton. So that may happen. We'll have to wait and see. But as you said, I think this week will be tied up with the drama surrounding the Bush funeral and whether there's reconciliation between the Bushes and President Trump.
It seems to me that if such a scandal or such a story existed, that this would be a bad week to drop it. I mean, if it were asking my opinion, I would say wait till Thursday or wait
That's
till
right.
the following Monday.
Definitely.
Because I mean, Monday night, the Bush family will arrive in Washington. His body will lay in state there. And I just think that it's probably not a good week to have these partisan attacks. But I've been wrong before and stuff like that, Bill.
Well, we've all been wrong. It's impossible to predict the future because you don't know what's in somebody else's mind. But the tensions in Paris are exceedingly important, and Americans should pay more attention to them. Also, we have to look at, in a very cold way, at Christmas spending. But the Christmas spending season is on because it has a great deal to do with the health of the retail economy, which is a very important ingredient in the president's economic plan. Also, are these openings in government that really need to be filled. He's got to have a new attorney general, and there are so many stories surrounding the chief of staff of the White House that I have to believe he will soon be heading for, you know, warmer climates. And,
that's right.
And that will have to be fixed.
Well, there's also a story out there, you know, all the stuff about this fellow Roger Stone, who apparently knows something, that he's convinced that President Trump is not running for re-election. So, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors out there. I guess, you know, there's always been rumors in politics, Bill, but these days with 24/7 cable news, your rumor has a better chance of becoming a story, because there's so many outlets for rumors now, Bill, than there used to be.
Well, that's the point. People don't realize that in journalism, you have to fill pages. You know, it isn't like Hollywood where they can decide to make a film or not to make a film. When when a paper comes out, like the New York Times comes out, they have 96 pages they've got to fill with advertising to pay for the paper, and that means surrounding the advertising with stories that may be exceptionally trivial. And the networks, of course, the same thing. If you are CBS News and you have a half-hour broadcast at night, you'd better find some news. There may not be anything that happened that day, but you'll find something. And
that's right.
You know, the president calls it fake news. Sometimes I just think it's exaggerated news.
Yes, and sometimes I think I wish sometimes he wouldn't pick a fight with with every news story, because, you know, he turns a lot of these unknown journalists and networks or newspapers that nobody reads, he turns them into heroes that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be. Sometimes I wish he would, you know, pick his fights, as they used to say, or wait for a good moment to pick a fight, not pick a fight with everybody who criticizes you. But that's
really
Trump. I mean, his style is Trump, and he's probably not going to change. And that's, if he's reelected, we can look forward to six more years of this, Bill, of that personality. I don't know.
Well,
maybe he'll change.
Maybe he will. Maybe he will soften. Maybe he will be counseled by Chelsea Clinton or somebody, or somebody kind and warm. But I think that you can't predict it. And you remember one thing you can't predict also is biology. You know, we're assuming all these people will be with us. You don't know what can happen tomorrow. I very rarely predict anything at Urgent Agenda for that reason. That who knows what will come out of the sky and change the world.
That's right. Well, the only thing I can predict is that I'll call you next Sunday night, Bill.
Absolutely.
I'll predict.
And Al Gore can predict that by next Sunday, New York City will be underwater.
That's it. So you'll have to do the show on a canoe there in New York City. Get your cell phone in a canoe, and we can do the show from the canoe. How's that, Bill?
That would be beautiful, just wonderful. But we will not pollute the lake around us.
No, we won't. Don't throw any garbage into the lake, and don't.
Right.
You need to paddle. You don't want to run any machines in the water and pollute the water. But anyway, have a wonderful week, Bill, and I look forward to Urgent Agenda every day. It's a great website, and thank you so much for the great work that you do.
Thank you, sir, and I look forward to our conversation next week.
Thank you very much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Always enjoy chatting with Bill. Always enjoy getting information at Urgent Agenda. It's a great source. Great source. We recommend it to everybody. You know, I check it every morning when I'm getting ready in the morning. I check it and check it a couple of times a day. There's a lot of good stuff at Urgent Agenda that I would recommend that you look at. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, where we believe the weather is going to get a little colder over the next week, and that's probably okay. It's winter. Bye-bye, everybody.